I love talking about.
Okay.
I
Well,
do.
you'll see. This is like this is our what is that was what was I saying? Our mandatory Black History episode. But it's not really mandatory, but it is actually mandatory because we gotta honor 12 Carl Weathers. So that was like I guess that's kind of the main idea of what I was thinking about doing. Just talk about him and then talk about whatever, just like but yeah,
Am
whatever,
I
whatever.
allowed to like say that this is like the worst Black History Month on record? I'll be 41 on Friday, and I don't remember having a worse February than this month. All the people that have died, all the chaos that has gone on. I'm like, what is going on in February? Like, what the hell? And like, I don't know, Carl Weathers dying kind of hit me hard because I was a kid when I was watching his movies. And those, for some reason, when you're like a child and there's a star from your childhood that you remember that passes away, it hits like extra hard. It's so, I don't know how to explain it, but you know,
Wait,
at
yeah. I'll say, wait, well, let's do it. Let's go right into the episode today. He's gonna do like the
Yeah.
thing.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to this week's episode of Action for Everyone for this here, February 25th, 2024. I'm, as always, your host, Mike Scott, joined by Vice Victus. Vice, how are you today?
Yeah, I'm in the martial spirit. I'll explain it later, but yeah, I'm doing good, feeling okay. And we have yet another illustrious guest ready for y'all. This hype. This is a good episode. It's money right here. You should be paying for this shit.
And not at soccer, Liam O'Donnell. Liam, how are you today, bud?
I'm good. The pollen is going crazy out here, so I sound a little weird, and I'll be muting to blow my nose.
You look a little puffy around the eyes.
Well, I had the daddy daughter dance last night. That's as big as it gets for me with my zombie shift editing really early in the morning. I have a very low social battery. Yeah, it was a big exertion for me last night, but I'm here. I'm excited to be with you guys.
Saw the picture. You guys looked amazing. You looked very dapper.
Thank you so much.
And our special guest returning once again, Valerie Complex. Valerie, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
You're great. Here, so
I'm
here,
trying to remember the name that I made up for Liam last time. I don't know if it was like Nathaniel or something. It was some other name that was not Liam. And so I was trying to remember what it was, but I think the moment has passed and it's time for the real one. So, Liam, how are you? I just
I'm
wanted to say
good.
that on record.
Yeah, no,
Liam.
I do. I do remember that. There we say.
Well,
I'm glad you remember my name this time.
Well, it's funny, like speaking of history, like so part of what we wanted to do, what I wanted to do is like so we kind of had to do our obligatory Black History Month episode because that's how we roll around here. Because we're all inclusive. We're the good white people podcast, not the bad white people podcast. But like the thing is like and also like I just want to like it's been a while, so long between us personally that we haven't really caught up in a long time. So I want to catch up with you, you know, just kind of, you know, just see what we're up to. But also, you know, as we talked about in a previous episode, we mentioned previously, you know, the sad news from earlier this month that Carl Weathers, the great iconic black action hero, has passed away. So we also wanted to do a little bit of tribute to him and give him proper honors. You know, us being, you know, the Action for Everyone podcast, he's a foundational text, you know, an icon for what we all love and what and do. So yeah, wanted to talk about him as well. But yeah, I guess it's hard to explain this, so I'm just gonna like shout out because Valley, so you know, that's like, so one of the annoying things about being a black film journalist is that like you rarely get like pitches or like, you know, requests to write stuff, but then usually when February comes around, people are like, hey, it's Black History, let's talk about black movies. Hey, you're black, you wanna write for us? So that's what you get, like, that's your money time. But from what I've been seeing and reading, people, other black journalists, the call is not going out anymore. Nope. Have you felt that?
Yeah, I've seen it. I've seen people talk about it online. I was not obligated to write anything at my job, even though I'm doing something. I didn't do anything written, and I've seen it, and I'm seeing it, and a lot of people just weren't getting that call. And I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, the way that journalism is currently going. But it's still quite shocking because I'm like, there are websites that are still around that are like, oh well, you know.
Yeah. It's like all that goodwill after the Black Lives Matter stuff. You're like, oh, like, you know, people were getting like tons of like good messages and like offers and stuff, and now like, you know, fuck that shit, that shit's done, you back to work, are you? Like, go back. Back to reality.
I used to make, I remember as a freelancer making bank. And it was just like, I didn't see that happening with a lot of people this year. So,
Yeah, like you said, it's just the nature of journalism as well, probably a big factor of it. Like, even now, if you're reading over the weekend, like, you know, was it, I guess, like the Vice website, you know, ironically, getting shut down and, you know, getting retooled by all these finance guys. So, yeah, it's horrible, horrible February. Sad news all around, and just horrible, horrible state of the world. But you know, that's
it is. I mean, it's true.
Yeah, this is a good podcast. This is a good discussion.
Yeah, I kind of went from like railing against AI like earlier, like end of last year on this pod a lot, to now I'm just like, I just hope I can finish this one last movie before the world ends. Like, I don't have any more fight left in me, except just let me just get this one last thing done, because everything seems like it's going to shit.
I swear, because I'm like, when am I going to, like, I always ask myself, am I going to get my shine before things burn up? Like, in the famous words of Sarah, you know, Connor, it's like, we're going to all be wearing 2 million sunblock and having a bad day. I don't want that to happen before I at least get my first, you know, graphic novel and first script sold. That has to happen. After that happens, and after Liam finishes his movie, then shit can go to dust. I don't care. But before that, we need success. We all need our wins.
Yeah. No, I hear you. I hear you. Thank you.
Oh, man. What a great pick me up today. This is great.
It's a real funeral. It's a funeral podcast.
Well, you know what? Yeah. I mean, honestly, yeah. You know, that's part of the thing. You know, we're going to celebrate, or, you know, we have this in mourning, so, or this wake we have. But, you know, it's good. Like I said before, like, whenever there's these events like this, I do like to, for me, it's more of a celebration, appreciation of what we have and what we had. So, yeah, with that, without doom and gloom, I just, you know, if we want to, we'll talk about the main thing actually with Carl Weathers. And, yeah, Mike, you know, I don't know where we want to begin. Just that, other than saying, you know, Carl Weathers is a goat. I don't know.
It's funny, I'm looking at his IMDb and I cannot believe he directed an episode of The Renegade. Like,
Mike has that whole season behind him on that show.
Really? Oh, okay. I was going to say, do we remember The Renegade? Because we talk about Carl Weathers and Black history. I recently had turned on the TV and there was an episode of The Renegade that was on. And it was an episode about Nazis and how Lorenzo Lamas was like protecting this commune of like black and brown and like white folks who were like just come out of jail who were trying to do better. So I thought that was interesting. I don't know if Carl Weathers directed that exact episode, but it's just sort of funny the trajectory of how I envisioned that. And I'm looking and I'm like, an episode of The Renegade. He also directed an episode of Silk Stockings, which is so weird. But
I can give you the log line of his episode of Renegade. It's Reno, which is Lorenzo Lamas, goes undercover as an escort when Bobby's former fiance is blackmailed by the escort agency. The title was Studs.
Studs. Amazing, amazing shit. Now I gotta look for that episode. He's really like directed some really interesting stuff. Like he directed 8 episodes of Silk Stockings, Pensacola, Wings of Gold.
Wow. I don't know all these shows.
Man, I used to love Pensacola Wings of Gold. I mean, I loved all these shows. I watched all of these, but I have not thought about Pensacola Wings of Gold in like 30 years.
Me neither. Like, not at all. But he's also like directed recent stuff like Chicago Med, an episode of FBI, an episode of Law and Order, the last
Mandalorian. Episode, yeah.
The Mandalorian. Like, you know, so he was directing and producing as well as acting. He has like, I don't know, 3 pages of credits. Like the guy was always working. And as I, you know, was saying before, he's an action guy from my childhood. My first exposure to films were action and horror. And he was one of the first, like I hadn't seen Predator or Rocky or any, I had seen Action Jackson. That was the first one, that the first Carl Weathers film that I had seen. And that was what I had to go on from there. And it meant a lot to see this, you know, black dude be the hero in this action movie, you know, with Vanity, who was probably high 100% of the time.
She's so high.
She was high 100% of the time. And it was just a great film. I'm probably going to watch it again at some point. I had the tape. I used to watch it so much. The ship popped. And the VCR, and like, you know how when you eject the VCR tape and it come out and like with the string of tape cuts, it was just like, I used to watch it so much. So it was a big Hollywood loss. He was a great supporting character actor who skirted different genres and had different talents and brought different things to different, you know, performances, and inspired a generation of others who, you know, pursued action like Michael Jai White and Keenan Ivory Wayans and stuff like that. So big, big, huge loss.
Yeah, for me, it gives me a chance to shout out. So one of the reasons he was directing all those TV shows is because he was in a show that our good friend Vanilla Gorilla, Andy Gorham, and I have been talking about nonstop lately, which is a 2-season running TV show called Street Justice, that if people didn't watch this, I loved the fuck out of this show. It's the show that introduced our boy Brian Genesee to the world, and you know, friend of the show, Brian, and hopefully future guest if I can track him down. But it was a great show, and it was also, Andy and I have been rewatching some episodes. And what's weird to me about Carl Weathers' career is how much it wasn't a big deal in his roles that he was this giant black man. Hear me out. I'm trying to articulate this. It is very weird the way we have actually regressed in a lot of our media, in that Street Justice was this show about this, you know, giant cop played by Carl Weathers and this hunky young kid played by Brian Genesee. And it, like, the show did deal with race, but it wasn't the defining characteristic of their roles in a way that we see a lot now. And I think that speaks to the way Weathers was able to transcend everything. But it also gave his immortal Saturday Night Live opening monologue from, I want to say, around 1986, where he said, only in Hollywood Can a slow, short white man beat a black man who is bigger, taller, and faster than him? but it hit. I did not expect it to hit me as hard as it did. But it hit because the thing with Carl is he's one of those guys that was just always there. He was always around. He was always going to be around. He was going to, if you didn't see him for a while, he would show up in The Mandalorian. He would show up in whatever. He, you know, like you said, Valerie, you'd be watching an episode of Hawaii Five-0 and up would pop, directed by Carl Weathers. You know, he's not somebody that you ever think of as not being here anymore. And that's always weird to me when celebrity deaths, when those type of celebrity deaths happen, because we now live in a world without Carl Weathers. And I don't know that I like that world. It's why I told Liam and Vice, I said, actually the movie that I watched on the day he died, a lot of people were watching Action Jackson, which is great. A lot of people were watching Predator. I actually had to watch Creed, even though he's not in Creed, because that entire movie is about him. It's not just about Apollo Creed. It kind of feels like it's about Carl Weathers too, and his legacy and what he brought. And so, you know, it felt like the most appropriate movie. And so I am glad that if nothing else, even though he wasn't in it, which is, you know, we can argue whether he should have or shouldn't have been in some sort of flashback or something, but that is a movie that I think celebrates his legacy that most people don't get. Liam, you're chuckling.
I was just going to say, I still just feel like Apollo shouldn't have died in Rocky IV. He should have been in a coma. I think that the death is actually messes the story up, but that's my Rocky rant. I'm like the opposite of Valerie in that literally I just watched Action Jackson for the first time last night. It's one of those movies where I thought I had watched it and I was like, yeah, I feel like
you watched it. It's one of those movies.
It's so familiar. Everything was familiar. And then when it starts, I was like, oh, I definitely haven't seen this. I've just seen all the memes and everything. And so really enjoyed it. So for me, the movie it's Predator. And that's the first R-rated movie I saw and I watched a million times. And it's kind of like, you know, my Rosetta Stone for films, really. So I didn't get into the Rocky movies until college because I grew up in the Irish Italian Riviera of Massachusetts, and like all the Italian kids were just too about Rocky that I was like, this isn't for me until college. I finally sat down and watched there was only five at that time. And I was like, holy shit, this is a great American saga. And I'm kind of like the big, the hero or not hero, the supporter of Rocky III, because I think it's Weathers' best performance. And I really, you know, there is no tomorrow speech is kind of like, it gives me chills every time. So that was kind of the movie that I thought of when he passed away. It was him in Rocky III. And that's why he's really great in Rocky IV too. And I still feel like, you know, maybe he shouldn't have died and should have been in a coma. And you still could have had that emotional through lines later on in the saga. But hey, it is what it is. And we did get Creed and all those great stories to follow that, like Mike said, it's a celebration of his legacy.
I remember you mentioned before a while ago that we were talking about Stallone and Schwarzenegger, and you said Carl Weathers is he's in their best movies. He's in he's Rocky, he's central in Rocky, and he's he goes toe to toe with Arnold and Predator. Like he's kind of the driving force of he cooks up the story with the movie. Granted, like that's his role there. And yeah, it's almost a strange kind of legacy in that I don't know. It's like well, I guess in history movies, you know, not quite the, Black people, African-Americans, our role in cinema, this is very, you know, it's as strange and wild as our history in this country itself. And so, and we have these kind of breakthroughs every so often where we kind of transcend our mandated confines of what we're supposed to be. And I like how in Rocky, you know, like you said, Rocky is, he's the protagonist of the movie, but like in the text of those films, even from Rocky all the way to the Creed 3, all the entire saga, like that universe, that world understands that Apollo Creed is the greatest boxer of all time. He's like the Muhammad Ali, like, and the movies treat him as such. Like, yes, we're following this, like, you know, this lovable loser Rocky in his quest to glory, but at all the way through it is like he is in the shadow of this this living God. And I really like that. Even though you know, even though he's like in the background, so to speak, as far as like on a maybe script wise or like story wise, like it's his shadow is so long. His iconography is so great. And you, I think honestly, like nobody else on this world could have done played that iconography except Carl Weathers. Like just like him as a naturally gifted athlete, you know, he has the look, the charisma, the moves, like the swagger. He's a total package, and like they couldn't have found a better person to fill that role. And so like you're saying, Mike, like his legacy as a in real life makes that legacy in the story like all the more impactful. Like it couldn't have happened without Carl, his own like his spark, his unique spark. And, you know, same with like, you know, in Predator, like just like you know, much Predator was like Arnold is prime, like he's the gigantic, what they call the Austrian Oak. You know, he's unstoppable, he's invincible. And of course, you know, the subtext or text of Predator is that you have this like you have these stock 80s action heroes who are in that at that time like the big thing in Hollywood, and then this X factor, this alien comes in and photos them all, and like you had to have somebody like Carl Weathers who could also kind of exemplify that indomitability, but also you know the whole like plot twist of like, you know, the deception and all. Like he's a complex character basically in what you think are these like stock characters, you know, like he and nobody, again, same thing, nobody else can really pull off that, be able to like have the beef and the heavy artillery of an action hero, but also like kind of the mindset and the guile, the kind of the complex thought of a CIA agent, you know. Like, yeah, so just that, just like these two movies that made these great action heroes, like they're like staples in their catalogs, Arnold and Sly, like they wouldn't, they owe their success in a many ways part to Carl Weathers. And they've said as such, which is great. I remember, on his passing, I think a few days afterwards, Sylvester Stallone, he put out an Instagram post about, you know, kind of mourning Carl. And you could just see he was just so distraught. He was like, and he was saying how Carl Weathers was integral to his success, and you can see he meant every word. And yeah, anyway, so yeah, it's a strange kind of way to put this. The legacy of this great black actor is part of his legacy. Is he's emboldened these other white actors, and like, it's not. I don't know. I don't think it's not a bad thing. It's a strange. It's kind of, again, it's a strange existence of being African American, and our success has either like caveats or asterisks to it, you know. And like again, it's like I'm not saying that he's a second banana and that he's and that's we should feel bad for him. No, it's just like he exemplifies this unusual existence we have, and like nobody else could. Yeah, it's a really kind of complicated emotion to express, but he expresses this sentiment through his movies. Like it's just. And like I think, yeah, it's like nobody else could have done that. Like Danny Glover, you know, got famous for the Lethal Weapon movies, you know. And again, the famous Danny Glover, Mel Gibson, the white cop black cop dynamic. You know, they are the example. They are what rich interracial buddy action movie is. So that's, you know, but that's Danny Glover's lane. Like they don't have. It's not quite the same complexity of this experience. Like Carl Weathers has put in his movies. This is his own thing, and he owns it.
Absolutely right. You're right. It's not. I don't consider Danny Glover an action star.
Yeah.
He's been in action movies, but I don't consider him an action star. I didn't mean to cut you off. I'm sorry. Because I was going to ask you guys a question, and why the action hero pipeline for black actors is not the revolving door. It is for white actors.
The white actors get so many chances, and it's like the black one like you know, Action Jackson underperforming, they're like, that'll be 4 years before you get another chance. And then that is the shame. And it's hard not to look at like the early 2000s when they were just putting every bland white guy into every movie no matter how many times they failed, and be like, what the fuck.
I mean, they still do that now, and yeah. The thing is, like, when Vice talks about losing Carl Weathers and that there will never be another like him, that is an honor and also a sad reality. We don't have enough. That Hollywood is not putting them through the pipeline like they should be. There's no reason why Michael Jai White should not be as big as Carl Weathers, why he has not been in any of the Expendable films or in John Wick, for that matter. Wesley Snipes had the Blade films, but he hasn't really had anything since then. And then you have your Mark Hicks, who has always been a stunt performer, but he's done a couple of films. And it's funny because he was in a film with Paul Rudd called Gen Y Cops, Hong Kong Action.
Oh yeah.
Frosted on tips.
That purported Paul Rudd as this like Hong Kong action star, but I'm like, you have Mark Hicks here, who's been new, and then you had like Billy Blanks, who was doing stuff in Hong Kong, but you just don't have that pipeline. Even when you look at Pam Grier and what she was doing during the Blaxploitation era, we don't have that anymore. We just don't have a pipeline for it. And when we lose our icons, they're gone forever. If, you know, God forbid, Jean-Claude Van Damme dies, there will be another purported up to replace him. That's what people always talk about Jason Statham for. He's the new this and he's the new that. But ain't nobody take, you know, there's nobody to come up that you can talk about that's going to come up after Carl Weathers. And I think that that's ridiculous. I think it's a shame. I mean, I guess you could say people like Will Smith or action stars, you know, I guess there's a few. You know, if you want to call them action stars, I have a very different definition of what that means. When you look at, I still have a hard time calling Tom Cruise an action star. I'm sure that's what he's doing. And that's I have a hard time just, you know, he's doing action and he's in action films and he does it well, but I wouldn't call him an action star. I'd call him a movie star. You have The Rock, who, you know, is an action star, but he's one guy sitting on top of a crown, I mean, on a floating throne of air, because there's no one really under him. So I just wanted to throw that fact out there and was curious to know what you guys thought about that.
Well, yeah, it's funny, The Rock specifically, well, like The Rock and Vin Diesel, the closest thing we have to, like, big franchise starter black action heroes, they're barely black.
Right.
The Rock is half black. His dad.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean.
I don't even know is what Vin Diesel's makeup is. Is he?
I think he's a half or a quarter.
Okay.
But when's the last time? I think maybe in G.I. Joe. The Rock was playing a black man who had black children.
Yeah.
I think that was the first and last time that I remember that being the case. And Vin Diesel, I don't know. He plays
His daughter, not that it matters, but isn't his daughter in the Fast movies black?
He plays up Samoan a lot.
Okay.
Does he have any children in Fast? I didn't know he
had. Yeah, because he's coaching soccer. Yeah.
But he's teaching him to do the Samoan, like, haka.
The haka. Yeah, he's teaching him to do the haka.
You know what? That's a great point. Like, that speech of this distinction, like, this is one of my galaxy brain takes, is that because Dwayne Johnson and Vin Diesel, because they are, ethnically ambiguous, or they can be, like, that's actually they use that to their strength. Like, they can kind of expand what they're supposed to be as characters, which is a good thing. It's like it gives them like a little kind of versatility of what their character means. You know, like, you know, he's doing, like, you can play up the Samoan part of him, or you can play up the black part of him, in either way. And it's like, it's a cool thing to do. It's a very pretty, it's a pretty dynamic capability. But yeah, but on the other hand, if you want to look at it, if you want to be denigrating about it, you could also say that we have to order down our black action heroes in order to be acceptable nowadays. Like, that's the cynical way to look at it. You know, you can't just be like, you know, black man. Like, and oh, so this also goes back to the part about the pipeline. Like, And yeah, same thing. We had a whole episode about this, Valerie. We were like kind of bringing up who is the next great action heroes for the new generation, and we were thinking about people like, you know, Chiwetel Rhodes and Michael B. Jordan. Like, you know, the raw talent is out there for sure. Like, but like you said, no pipeline. Well, you know, sadly, you know, we lost. You know, speaking of great losses, we lost Chadwick. You know, I think Chadwick was probably the main guy. He was probably the number one to, you know, heir to the throne, and sadly he's gone too now. You know, he had the power, the charm, the charisma, and the backing. The people loved him, and the studios were like willing to fight for him. But then, you know, then he passed. So like after that, the throne is empty now. There's really nobody available. And
he,
now, like
you said. He literally, I don't know if you guys saw those articles this week about, you know, the MCU scrambling to find a replacement for Robert Downey Jr. And it got me thinking that Chadwick Boseman was so important and so set to be a megastar that his death actually destroyed the MCU, because he was set up to be the new foundation of the MCU. That was very clear. And his death actually like threw their entire plans asunder. That's how important he was. It's actually kind of amazing in what amounted to a fairly brief career in the long run that he established such a legacy that and such power. But you're right. Unfortunately, to go to the initial point, he is gone. You know, he's another icon that is gone. And sorry, I totally cut you off, Vice. That just struck me as I was just thinking about, as I was reading all those articles, I'm like, yeah, it's because Chadwick died. You guys got fucked and you had no backup plan. Yeah. For Chadwick Boseman,
yeah, and like to Valerie's point on it, the Chadwick was kind of Well, I mean, that's the funny thing, like in his case, because you could also argue that he wasn't necessarily an action hero. I mean, I think he became one, but like, you know, his big thing, he was dramas. He was like, you know, Jackie Robinson. He was Thurgood Marshall of all that. Like that, he was a dramatic. Yeah, he was a real actor, but he also could move. But like, and now, and then we other people like Ilan Noel. You know, he was in one of the Purge movies. Got a great breakout performance as an action star, even though you didn't think he was. But he just like that brawl in the apartment building when he's killing all those crazy Nazis.
You're talking about the Purge?
The first Purge. Things like that. We have the raw material, and we have there's showcases for this great talent. But like you said, they don't want to cultivate him. They don't want to like boost him up to give him these, you know, these action roles to build him up, to build up the hype. There's nothing to it. And, you know, sadly, like that's, and it's the same way. Well, it's most evident for us looking for a black icon. It's very evident to us, but even it's affecting the entire industry. Like, on the same page, you know, who's that? Glenn Powell, you know, prime cut white boy. That's grade A white boy right there. Glenn Powell. He got the juice. He got the body. He got it all. No pipeline. There's no avenue for him to be a next great action star. Like he can't like face Liam Hemsworth or whatever. Like, it's just the entire system has eroded so much. It's all about, you know, franchises. It's all about these mega IPs. But they don't want to build up anybody. But you know, like I said,
fascinating point. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Yeah. I keep thinking out loud. I'm sorry.
No, that's my reason. Yeah, I'm saying, you know, that it's affecting the whole industry. But like we feel it acutely. But now it's being felt, you know, studio wide. It's a really time.
And I think that I think when you talk about the franchises, I think that's a really good point, because if we look at the 80s and 90s, you had all kind of weird shit coming out. You had American Ninja, you had China O'Brien, you had all these different avenues for mostly white actors to create themselves or turn themselves or shape themselves into action stars. You were allowed to do that. You were allowed to, you know, sort of take $5 million and create this hokey action film and turn it into something. But now that everything is franchise, it's like franchise Hollywood versus indie. There's no middle ground. There's no middle area. So you have stuff like The Beekeeper, which, you know, it's one of those sort of mid-level films that exist somewhere in the middle, and you don't know if that's something that's going to turn into a franchise or something that's going to exist just in the action space. And there aren't many levels to it, and so I think that's what's creating this sort of void that is existing. And then when you look at a lot of the things that are in the pipeline, we keep getting the same shit from Black folks. Like, we keep getting the same, we keep getting another Bad Boys 4. It's like, okay, sure. You know, look at Mahershala Ali with Blade and how long that's taking. They can't even find somebody to write the shit. Like, it's taking like a ton of time to do that. And he's also like he's not somebody that I would consider an action star. Like, no. That's not, you know, he's a two-time Oscar-winning guy for drama. And I know that the MCU, that's the other problem. There's so many problems. You really are right. Like the system is so broken, mm-hmm. because they're always looking for, especially the MCU, they're looking for who has won an Oscar so that we could put them in the MCU. At least with DC, they were choosing people who were fairly new. They were going out and being risky. And a lot of the failures of the DCU isn't necessarily their fault, except for Gal Gadot. But you know, it isn't necessarily their fault. But in the MCU, they're choosing all of these dramatic actors and not giving a chance to some of the people who may already be trained, who may, you know, understand the business of action. And I mean, then you have other people who aren't interested either, like Jason Statham claims he's not interested in doing MCU movies, whatever. I'm sure if they offered him, if the check was right, he'd say, how high you want me to jump. But I think that, you know, you're right. The system is just broken. Not enough risk, not too much space, not enough pipeline. It's kind of messy. And that's why I think a lot of us turn to stuff like John Wick, and we turn to international action stuff, because that's where the pipeline is growing. Like, Vietnam and Thailand has a whole roster of women who are leading their own action films. That's not happening here. I mean, sure, you might get stupid shit like Peppermint or whatever. that's not the action films that when we look at women and being in action, that's not what we're looking for. Then that's why I even turn to international cinema, because it's like there's really nothing to super offer here.
You know how bad it is? Like you know, we talk about covers and Black action heroes, but like now I'm talking about white women, because I have to as a Black man. That's stereotypical. But I remember we had the Underworld franchise and Resident Evil, like, you know, Kate Beckinsale and Mila Jovovich, they was doing a damn thing right after Blade. You know, like, they were riding that wave of, like, that, you know, the black leather, you know, neo noir, like, high tech stuff, you know. And you know, they was doing it, you know, on a mid budget, and they had high, basically $1 billion franchises over time. They had like 5-6 movies, you know. Now not even that. Not even the white women can succeed like that no more. That's how crazy it is.
And it's like the Hunger Games is like not, the Hunger Games is not Underworld, and it's not Resident Evil, despite what you may think about Resident Evil and Underworld. That was where the action girlies were thriving, mm-hmm. And the films were making bank. I think Underworld has like 5 or 6 movies, and Resident Evil has 6. Yeah. Yeah. Right, that's where the action girlies were thriving. And then we had Halle Berry, who was in John Wick 3, who I don't understand how Ana de Armas got a spinoff when you have this character, mm-hmm. already in your universe, wow. who has a backstory that we're willing to explore. And I'll talk to you guys offline about that, because I heard some stuff. But you have this
Patreon, y'all.
To explore, and you're just not putting, they're not putting the time and money behind it. Mm-hmm. So see, that's a pipeline that's broken, that's lost. So there's a lot of different, you know, talking to you guys, I'm seeing that there's a lot of different factors and in the failure of action and what that looks like.
Yeah.
So,
I guess, yeah. So it's, you know, what's funny that you were talking about earlier, how Hollywood has been diversified in his career, like behind the camera as well. And I was just thinking about it, like, I wonder if he, maybe not that he did saw this coming, but like, he realized himself even way back then that he couldn't just stick to be an action guy. Because, like, you know, as iconic as Apollo Creed and Dylan Fetter is, like, he's gained just as much notoriety for a maybe younger audiences. His comedy, like, Happy Gilmore? Yeah, he's a golf coach. Like, people remember the movie for him, you know, with the one-armed golf coach guy. Like,
I was going to mention him when you said about basically how he was putting white actors over, and I thought, like, yeah, he really kind of, I mean, that is Sandler's, like, big breakthrough best performance, especially of that era, and yeah, so in wrestling terms, he was like the company man who put the other guys over in a lot of ways. Yeah.
Yeah, but even then, like, you know, like, that's, like, as far as the comedy space, that's actually one of the great comedy characters of that generation. And most recently, what is it, the Arrested Development TV show was a big hit, and he came on as himself. He was a cameo, as he played a character of himself, and that popped a lot too. Like, even now we see, like, all the, you know, memes and stuff of just him characters, him being cheap, you know, a baby, he had a stew going, like, and it's actually kind of, I guess, fascinating. Maybe he realized that long ago that you couldn't just be pigeonholed to the action space, and, like, that's where he kind of diversified his comedy chops. Because also, yeah, he's fucking hilarious, you know, like, and he's just as good as he is as a physical actor, action actor. He's comedy gold. This is great. Yeah, so maybe he saw that all along, like, you couldn't pigeonhole yourself. So he had, like, so he took it on his own initiative to, like, diversify like that. Out of necessity, but also out of, you know, he had the skill to do so. Yeah. I guess that's the thing. His iconography is not just on the screen, but, like, his work ethic, or his body of work. That he's an example that way. That if you're an actor, black actor, or any actor coming up, like, you can't pigeonhole yourself. And I think we mentioned The Rock and Vin Diesel. Like, The Rock started out the gate kind of doing really wild stuff, but now he's kind of pigeonholed himself. To being this, like, you know, invincible action hero, and, like, people are on Brian and shit no more. And he's got to go back to
regret that we didn't talk about it last week, because this is not a wrestling podcast. But last week, The Rock's promos on WWE had me fucking levitating, like I was, you know, back in high school. It was so good to see him as a heel slapping Cody Rhodes in his punk ass face. I love him.
Well, what's the tea on that? Like, why is he back at wrestling? Is the money low or something? What's happening?
Well, I mean, the conjecture is that maybe he knows more, but, like,
I mean, Mike actually secretly knows way more. But pretty much he got offered, you know, Vince McMahon's out, and now The Rock is part of the board of TKO, which is the guy Ari Emanuel, you know, from Entourage, based on him. Who owns Endeavor and now basically owns the UFC, the WWE, and they're looking to buy a boxing company. And so it's basically a mega combat sports conglomerate. And they brought The Rock in because he's squeaky clean and Vince McMahon is the opposite. And so they wanted him to become, you know, back in and become sort of the face of the company. And it ended up just turbocharging all of the storylines in a lot of really fascinating ways where we don't know what is actually part of the drama and what's really happening behind the scenes. And it just brought out a side of him that we hadn't seen in like 10 or 15 years, really since Pain and Gain, where he was just actually swearing and telling people he was going to slap the herpes off their lips and stuff like that. It was great.
He also comes back every couple of years. He's never fully left WWE. Usually if he has something to promote, he comes back. Now, this one is bigger because he very clearly is, like, foundational to what they're doing. And part of that is because WWE is a bit of a wasteland of top level superstars right now. So there's a lot of factors going on, but I think Liam really hit the big one on the head, which is the whole Vince thing blowing up again. You know, like that's the thing. Vince blew up. They got him out. Supposedly they were going to be clean. And then they bring Vince, like, they let Vince back in. And
I don't think they let him. I don't think they didn't actually have the power to stop him from coming.
Right. I know. But, yeah. But yeah. So, you know, but also, I mean, if you know anything about Ari Emanuel and his brother, Rom, They run the world. They know how to do this stuff. They literally put people in high positions. So they know that The Rock is gonna be good for WWE.
Man, it's a crazy world, man. Yeah, it's funny, like, yeah, seeing The Rock talk shit again. That's as wild, man. And like, because you know, like, he wasn't exactly speaking clean himself. Like, he would say a lot of, like, you know,
homophobic stuff. Oh, no, I mean, like, that's the thing. Like, now, if you're a wrestling fan, like, I get constantly just fed old wrestling clips in my algorithms, and I just am always sending them to, like, Brandon and stuff. Like,
yeah.
It's always, like, his, the thing about The Rock is that the reason why he was always going to come back here is that he has a mean-spirited sense of humor, which I do too. So I identify with him. It hasn't been popular for the last 10 years to have a mean-spirited sense of humor. So like all of his funniest jokes, all of his best promos, they're mean.
Yeah.
Like, he punches down, he interrupts people, he slaps them in the face. It's like it was totally out of favor for the past decade, and so I kind of knew why people were like, he's not as funny anymore. He's like, he's trying to find his way, and now it's just kind of back. But like it always was kind of mean, and that's his baseline of like where he's gonna go if he's cornered to make a joke.
Yeah.
I wonder if people would consider, like, if The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, is like the, I wouldn't say the future of action heroes or black action heroism, but I don't know. I don't have.
It's Michael B. It's Michael B. He was my number one pick on our thing. I don't know. Yeah. I love everything he's done for the past couple of years.
Michael B. Jordan. Like, I want him to do more. I think he just needs to do more. I know he tried to do some. I know he was Jack Ryan at one point. And
oh, it's the other guy. It's the other guy. What's his name?
Not Jack Ryan. He was
John Clark.
Yeah, he's in the books. He's in the character he's in. He was in that movie Without Remorse. And that character that he was playing is part of the Jack Ryan universe. He's in all the books a lot. So yeah, like they were saying they're trying to get that, build that into the next franchise, with him being like that main character, but
it should be shooting already. Everyone just tinkers too long with these scripts. Just fucking shoot it already. Come on.
Yeah. But well, yeah, like you said,
I think when you have like studio mandates and boardroom, and boardroom screenwriters, everybody wants to turn everything into a franchise. And I think that that's where, you know, we go wrong. I think, you know, creating a franchise is something that should happen organically, like Skyline. Like, I think that was a pretty organic evolution. I remember seeing the first one and it was like a one and done thing. And it was like, cool. And then the second one came out and it was like, okay, so, you know, but it's so forced and so unauthentic that it's like, also this was created for franchise material, as opposed to this is a movie or a show that exists to exist. That's it.
I agreed. Like, it really bums some people out in Without Remorse. I remember John, like when we talked about it, the Vice and Mike were both lower on it because they set up a sequel. But I just kind of feel like that's obligatory at this point. But you know, watching Action Jackson last night, it's kind of interesting because that is like when you decide to name a character in your script Action Jackson and have everybody talk about him like he's the man and all that stuff, you are kind of trying to create a franchise in that old fashioned way. You know, they were trying to, so I don't know, it's been around longer. Like you could see, there should have obviously been more Action Jacksons, but they were trying to do that. The like Lethal Weapon, all those movies back then, there was like a, I mean, I guess you just call it good writing. They really do try to, it's almost like the first episode in that first act is like it's kind of like a pilot for what your hero is in a weird way.
It's just,
oh,
Valerie, you're muted.
Sorry, it's like I don't know if there's just more barriers in the way or again studio mandates. Like I really don't know what it is.
Because I guess I don't know, it could be running out of time, but one thing interesting, you know, like I guess part of the trying to see a way forward and like for specifically like you know the black Black actors slash action heroes. So I just kind of, it's kind of a tangent, but it relates to this. I happened to watch that the new show, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, recently, new on Amazon Prime, with the Donald Glover, aka Childish Gambino, and he's a fascinating dude. Like he has a lot of weird quibbles about him. He's a very strange dude, but like that kind of his appeal, and when this trailer came out for the show, you know, again, I think Mr. and Mrs. Smith was a show before, but then the big famous movie with the Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie came out a little while ago. You know, they're married couple and they're both spies. They didn't know each one didn't know they were spies. So the movie was kind of fun action comedy kind of thing. So when the trailer came out for this new show with Donald Glover and Maya Erskine, people were like people were kind of down on it because they were like they're very obviously not the same like stereotypical beautiful A-list Hollywood person or whatever. So but then my wife started watching it and I wasn't interested in the concept. I didn't care. But she started watching it, and this is a minor spoiler for the first episode of the show. It was literally the first 2 minutes. In the first 2 minutes of the show, they have these two actors who are the current like kind of stereotypical hot A-list Hollywood beautiful stars, and they murder them brutally. And then it goes immediately into like this new setup where you have Donald Glover and Maya Erskine like these washouts from the service or whatever. And they've kind of elected to do this mistress, this married couple spy program, and what follows is really a really kind of weird and unique take on spy fiction, and so yeah, I brought that to mind because I think he's one of the few actors now like actors nowadays who has found that way forward. Like he's you know he was a he, I mean and he had his own he was started off as a writer on Dirty Rock whatever with under Tina Fey. He was kind of her I don't know like he's her protege or whatever. And then he kind of came to his own community as a comedic actor. And then out of nowhere, he blew up as a musician, which we didn't know, you know, most people didn't even realize he had that ability. He became a world famous musician as Charles Gambino. And now, you know, he's had various acting roles over the, and of course, his big, you know, his own thing, Atlanta, the show on FX, it was a huge hit. It's kind of this absurdist, surreal comedy, like dark comedy. And now he's doing this like, kind of dark comedy action stuff. So yeah, like, and you know, he's a weird guy for sure. Like, Valerie can speak to this. Like, well, we've seen on Black Twitter, he has kind of a weird perception because he's like, he's not the typical black dude. Like, well, like one of the weird things people like make fun of before, like he has like an Asian woman fetish, you know, and he raps about all the time. So, you know, And to that point, though, to the show, you know, because Maya Erskine, like, she's like Asian, you know, part mixed Asian. They kind of, I just thought it was funny that in the show, like in the first episode, you kind of see him like, he, I think he knows that perception of him being like, a, like an Asian creeper. So in the show, he's like creeping on the girl Maya a little bit, but like that's part of the dynamic. Like he's trying to like warm up to her, but she was no part of it. You know, like so like again, like he's that, but I think even though he's a smart dude. And I think he like picked up on that, and like it's kind of working that into his character in the show.
We're bumping up on Valerie's hard art.
What I was going to say is that I think that the reasoning, like the initial reasoning, oh, they're not hot enough, was so just corny and just silly and dumb. I have tried to make it a point to not comment on castings or anything like that anymore, or remakes. I have my own like ideas of like, you know, what a casting should be, but I'm like, we'll never know, you know, it might turn out good or whatever. I think the last time I judged a casting was Ben Affleck's Batman, and that turned out to be decent. So I was like, let me shut up. I don't care about remakes anymore so much. I care about who's in them and who's a part of it. I think that's my focus right now. You know, Donald Glover, there are contentions with that. And, you know, he worked on the script initially with Phoebe Waller-Bridge's, I think that's her name.
I think you're right. Yeah.
And then she like dropped off the project and it turned into this thing. And, you know, Donald Glover talks about, you know, the hate he gets, you know, and the things that he's, you know, said and done for Black women. And he says he doesn't understand it, but he has not sat down and talked to a Black woman yet. Maya Erskine has interviewed him. He interviewed himself about the ordeal, but he has not sat down and talked to a Black woman. And I think that's the issue with that. Mm-hmm. But before I go, I wanted to tell you guys, thank you for having me on again. I'm sorry I have to run off, but please invite me back to another episode. I love talking action. I love talking about action. It is one of my favorite genres. So please have me on. I would love to talk about like women in action. Like I've been watching a lot of like old Hong Kong stuff recently, and watching a lot of older films, and a lot of them are boring, but I'm still enjoying myself. I really, really love the resurgence that we're getting from different parts of Southeast Asia and stuff like that. So please, please have me back on. I would love to. I will always make time for you all.
Yeah, every month is Black History Month, not just February. So absolutely, you have a standing invitation as always. You are prime guest. We really appreciate your work you've been doing. And like I said, I appreciate it from day one. You were supporting me since I got out the Army, you've been there with me ever since. And I really appreciate that so much. You have no idea. So yeah, Valerie, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate you coming on, man.
Thank you.
Okay, really quick, Valerie, before you go, plug some shit. Where can people find you?
Oh, you can find me on Twitter at, I'm not calling it X, at Valerie Complex, all one word. I am also on Instagram at Valerie_Complex2. You can find me on my website, which is valeriecomplex.com. And if you want to see my work at Deadline, you can find me at deadline.com and, search for Valerie Complex. You'll find my work there. That's where people can find me.
Perfect. Perfect. Love you, Valerie. We will definitely get you back on soon. You always have amazing, amazing insight. So you have basically a standing invite. We'll figure out something soon and get you back on.
Thank you. I've been like dying. One day I'm going to like sneak onto a set with Liam and just surprise him and like shadow him. Like,
I know. I remember you being like, I want to meet Eco. And I was like, oh, that'd be great.
Well, because I don't want to be a journalist forever. My goal is to screenwrite and direct. And get some of these action movies out of my head and, into real life and 3D. And so that's what I, want to do. So, props to you, Liam, for doing it and doing it unapologetically.
All right. Well, thank you, as always, to Valerie. She rules. She also gave us a little bit of off the record that we can't tell you guys. I just cut it out. But, I like to tease everybody. So actually, it also gives me a chance to talk about this. Sorry, this is completely bad podcasting. But I got this new thing. It's this little mini whiteboard that sits on my desk that also has a pen holder. Specifically for this stupid podcast, because now I can just quickly scribble the time codes if I have to cut something out, because I'd never have like a notepad or something in front of me to scribble down the time codes. So now I've got 105 to 109 cut. Anyway, there's what I do. There's what I do for this podcast. Well, stuff is kind of as you guys know, you saw in the Discord, I built a new rig. I got the A4E command center has been completely redone. And so I'm trying to like optimize it for podcasting. So anyway, that's neither here nor there.
Better feeling with the whiteboard than anything. Draw like just I love that. I love that texture.
I'm very pro whiteboard. I have one in my office that's when I'm getting ready for trial. I set up like three whiteboards, like literally like you see in movies. Like I set up like three whiteboards and I have like everything written out. It looks like a crazy man in my office because I got so much whiteboard, but there's just nothing. You just can't beat a whiteboard.
It can't be on whiteboard talking about History Month. What y'all talking about? Everybody's blackboards. What's going on with that?
Twice. Did your eyebrow go up as high as mine when Valerie said Danny Glover's not an action hero? I was like, wait, what?
No, you think I have galaxy brain tape, but she has like cosmic tape, but like hers makes sense.
I don't know. I'm just pretty jacked at the time period. Like,
but like you know,
Predator 2 exists. Predator 2 exists. I don't know.
I still remember. And never doing from my childhood, he did it was a Disney Channel like TV episode where he was playing John Henry. That's how in my head, like, even though like I have the iconography of Murtaugh and Harrigan in my head with Danny Glover as action hero, We also have him as like the kindly old man, and John Henry, and also as you know, as Mister in the Color Purple. Like, yeah, like he has so many domains in the minds of the Black generation of who his character is. So yeah, I totally get it. You know,
well,
like,
but,
it's hard to see Mister as an action hero.
but also Silverado exists, where he has, I think, his best action hero line ever, where he says, "Mister, I don't want to kill you, and you don't want to be dead." Which is just an amazing line. Turns out that Lawrence Kasdan guy's a pretty good writer. Who knew?
I saw that one later in life as well. I didn't grow up with it, and I was like, man, this is just a fantastic Western if you haven't seen Silverado.
All right, well, we don't have too much else to talk about, but I'll pop over to Vice. Vice, you we talked a little bit off mic, but you are doing strip mall karate.
Oh yeah. Okay. So, where do I begin? It's actually kind of very strange. Like, I just kind of, maybe it was just because of a random Instagram advertisements in my feed that were like, "Hey, Troy, join a karate class," you know, or join a social defense class, which I don't really know how that came to be in the algorithm, because I don't really search for that stuff in my Instagram. I mostly watch, you know, YouTube, and that's where you get my martial arts movie clips from. So yeah, it was very strange. Maybe it was God took it to me, tell me, "Hey, try this out." So yeah, I got it in my head to like give karate a try. Oh, and I guess it was that, and also just you know, I did a recent checkup, and I'm okay. Just it's just been a, you know, after my whole like almost dying ordeal, and kind of get back on the horse. You know, I feel all at once as strong as ever, but also I'm still frustrated about my progress of overall health. So yeah, that was just kind of getting to me. So I was like, you know, and kind of this, the adage goes like, you can't do the same thing and expect different results. So I kind of got it in my head, like, I gotta try something just outside the box, something different. So yeah, I just said, yeah, I'll go try a, or, you know, karate class or whatever. Just kind of see, just feel it out, you know, literally feel how my body feels. And it's funny, cause you know, like, I haven't done any formal martial arts training before, except for, you know, we did the combatives. It was kind of like a rudimentary jiu-jitsu kind of course, a self-defense course. Beyond that, though, yeah, I haven't really done much. And, you know, my best friend, he's a personal trainer who does, he's been a long time kickboxing training. So the realm of martial arts training is not new to me. I just never personally conducted a class myself. Yeah, so I decided to go check out do a free trial of karate class nearby. It was great. It was lovely. I walked into the class on this, like, it was like a Tuesday evening, and the instructor was doing like the kids class, and I was glad that I saw that, because I wanted to get a feel for what this person was really like. You don't just get that from, like, you got to see them in different environments. And I saw him right away. Like, he had this kind of, not commanding, but like the kids were like into attuned to him. They were paying attention to him, you know. And they were, you know, they were being, some of them were being unruly, because, you know, the kids, like, 7 years old, like, you know, those kids. But he was not being like the stern, strict, you know, Sifu. He or the sensei. He was like, he was like a teacher. He was responding to their energy, while still getting to the point. So that really impressed me. Like, I was just to see like this person I don't know as a person interacting with his community here where I'm in Queens Village. So yeah, I went on this yesterday morning and did my first intro class, and it was great. It was like kind of almost literally learning how to stand up and walk again. Like, he's doing these little drills of like how to do the proper stances. And this is a Shotokan karate, so it was pretty formal, pretty well known, pretty nothing too like crazy or dynamic, but yeah, just the act of standing in a stance or a posture, just learning that, like, it was almost like my legs have never done that movement before in my life. It might be true, like I had to like feel my body up for the first time again, and it was just kind of. As I was doing it, it was just three of us. It was me, like some like 8-year-old boy, and a 5-year-old little girl who was, and I was just overhearing between the sensei and her parent, her first day or her first official day. So and we, you know, just three of us. So we have all our other corners in the small dojo, practicing the very first fundamental stance techniques: how to stand, how to walk, how to move. And it was just, and then at the end, there were other kids coming in for the next session. So at the end, we lined up and we did the I forget what it's called, the Dojokan. Every dojo has like a little like formal, like their little like motto, or whatever their goals. You recite it together, and some of it is in Japanese, informal Japanese. Some of it is in English. So, and it was each student says the thing, and then the little girl, she's 5 years old. She can, you know, she's just how do I. I, you know, she, I don't know how advanced her speech is, but like she's trying to say the thing, and you know, she's just saying, you know, very quietly. And then I try to say it, and I'm like, wait, I don't know what I'm saying either. And then I thought about it, you know, like me, this 40-year-old man who was, you know, at three deployments and survived the bricks, and have all this like weight on me physically and literally and figuratively. And there's this almost this brand new human. And we're both on the same level at this moment in time. We both don't know what we're doing. Both fresh to this thing. We're both in the same place in the same, you know, outfit. And we're saying the same thing and having difficulty saying the same thing because it's the first time saying it. But yeah. And it was just really like a really great, humbling in a great way. Like, it felt like a fresh start. I feel like, you know, oh yeah, I can just kind of let all that shit go. I just kind of just focus on this new thing and just write it out. Just go with the flow. Just let it overtake me. I don't have to bring any like preconceived notions about, you know, I'm gonna be a kung fu killer or I'm gonna be a ninja master. I can just, no, I'm just gonna, again, I'm gonna learn how to stand on my own 2 feet. You know, but at this age, but yeah, it was a really great experience. I'm really happy. So I'm gonna stick with it for a little while. I'm doing the this first, I guess, semester or whatever you want to call it. It's like 5 weeks, you know, 5 week course of the basics, and then you can choose to continue on from there if you want. So yeah, I'm gonna do that, and I feel good. I feel I feel physically good. Well, my knees does still kind of tweak a little bit, which was what I was concerned about, because that's been my ongoing issue for years now. It's just knee problems. If I tear ACL or whatever, I'm done. I'm gonna be wheelchair bound for life or something like that. But no, it was like just kind of not being afraid to move like that. That was good because, you know, the instructor was like mindful of being an old fat dude. So he was like, but at the same time, yeah, well, you know, it's that sensei wisdom is like he knows you're a big fat dude who can't move properly, but he's not gonna hurt you. He's gonna force you to move ways to help you improve your to help you avoid injury, improve your stamina and your knee stuff. So yeah, really good experience. We'll stick with it for a little while. Shout out to all of our legitimate, for real, you know, practitioners of the arts who are listeners and our friends on podcast. You know, I always knew, you know, it's a difficult, I have a good idea of what you guys are going through again, because, you know, I have friends who's done this stuff. So like, I've always had the greatest admiration for any practitioner of any art, but yeah, it felt good to like, I don't know, not somebody said in my comments about like the hardest belt to earn is the white belt, and I kind of see what they mean by that, like just getting up and doing it, or similar to like if anybody has ever done like amateur boxing courses or like just learning how to box, like and they always say like if you can go 5 minutes in the ring with anybody, you know, you have the respect, like, you know, not anybody has the will to just even do that. And everything else beyond after that is just technicality, but it's the willingness to actually go and step in and do it. But yeah, I definitely felt that. That was good. That I was able to just kind of just, but it is funny that it was just so easy to do. Like, it's a 15-minute walk from my house. I could just like, I could do this years ago if I wanted to, but no, it just never occurred to me to like, you know, now that I'm in a different place in life. Like, you know, like I gotta do something different. I gotta change it up. So this was a great way to do it. Yeah, Karate Best Advice coming soon. It's not really
amazing.
And yeah, then, love it.
And Mike's doing his his physical
it's on hold. My believe it or not, my fucking tennis elbow came back. But apparently doing 100 push-ups is really so I gotta get some new elbow braces while it heals up, and then I'll be able to do
compression.
It. So.
You gotta get that compression on. That's why you guys see me when I do these where I wear like a million layers. Shed them as I get hotter. But I will not do any presses with the sleeveless. Like my shoulders always need to be tightly compressed. Because I think I have bad shoulders, like you have bad elbows. Like they're always the first thing to go.
Yeah. So yeah. It was really frustrating because I was doing it and I was sore, like my shoulders and my pecs and stuff were sore, but it was a good sore. But after about 4 days, my fucking I couldn't even like hold like a cup of coffee in my left hand. Like my grip strength was so weak because my elbow was so fucked up. So I got some new braces. I got to let it heal up a little bit. And then I promise though, I will be back at it. I'm going to fucking do this thing. This shouldn't be this hard for me to do this thing. So I'm going to fucking do this thing.
Just to commiserate with this is perhaps our oldest sounding podcast that we've ever done. The world is going to shit and we're injured and we're falling apart. I literally like tripped off the curb last night and my knee hurts in dress shoes. That's those goddamn dress shoes. I just stumbled off a curb and all day I'm like, why does my knee feel like I fucking like ran into a wall? It was just a tiny little so.
Well, I'm sure you look good doing it though, because that's a fly suit, man. I like that.
So I haven't gotten a new. That's a suit from 2015. And so it's very tight and uncomfortable for me now. But remember, we talked about how you have such an amazing wardrobe, but I wear a suit like once or twice a year. So I kind of do need a new suit because immediately I get home, I have to shed and get free of it. But I've been my youngest my oldest Ronan was like, it's just randomly. I used to force him to try to want to work out when he was younger, when we were in the pandemic and there was like nothing to do. And he didn't really take to it. And then he just kind of came to me a couple of weeks ago and said, Dad, I want to start working out. So I've been in the garage with him like almost like every other day or every 3 days. I'm definitely taking it easy on him because he's got more of my wife's genetics than me. So he's like naturally already like getting results. Like if my wife actually lifted, she'd be in like, like ripped. And she always makes fun of me how hard I have to work out to just get like noticeable. That's been fun. And just enjoying, hanging out with the kids, being a dad and still editing Warpath. Not really any other updates on that, unless Mike wants to share any updates. I don't know. We might want to go off the record for a second.
Well, I don't know. Are you okay if I share it? I'm happy to share it, but
I feel great. I feel great about sharing it. I don't know if there'll be news to Vice, but we'll figure it out.
Warpath is now properly A4E the movie, because I am a new co-executive producer on it. I bought in. That's how much I believe in Liam. We talked about I helped Janine because I got a little bit of money from my parents. Not much, not a ton. I don't want people to think that I've like won the fucking lottery here. It's a very small amount of money. But you guys had some, you had to hit for a second round of funding due to a couple of things, and you reached out to me very graciously. I don't want people to think Liam was like putting like the full court press. In fact, he was actually kind of doing the opposite of like, you really don't want to do this. It's fine. Don't worry about it. But
I actually told you to put in less money than you offered. So
yeah.
Pretty good about that.
Yeah, and you went to bat and convinced the producers to do that. So like, but yeah, I am now officially on board the Warpath train. As I told Liam, to quote the great modern philosopher Trent Reznor, you and me, we're in this together now. So so Vice, we are a unit. There will be an actual A4E logo at some point on it. You're coming along for the ride with us here. We're not leaving you in the dust on this one. This is a three-man operation here. So, but yeah, I am actually like now in, I, I can, I guess I can officially say I'm now like in the industry.
Oh, I'm kind of speechless. This is wonderful. It's like you say you're having a baby. This is wonderful. Wow.
Well, it's kind of doing this. It's kind of one of those things, not to get all mushy, but you know, I didn't get much from my parents. They left my life a mess. Their finances and everything was a disaster. So what I did get, I kind of feel like I wanted it to mean something. Like, I bought some shit. Like, don't get me wrong. I bought a new computer and stuff like that. But I wanted at least part of it to mean something. And I honestly can't. I mean, I grew up. That's why I'm a movie fan, is watching action movies with my parents. And so I can't think of something that means more than being a part of a movie that I believe in with, you know, directed by my boy Liam, with my fucking boy Scott. Like, I'm actually producing a Scott Adkins. This is the culmination of Adkins Undisputed. I am producing a Scott Adkins movie.
That was sort of, the, like, we talked about it. And I was like, yeah, no, you shouldn't do it. You shouldn't do it. And then we're like talking, I was like, it is starring Scott Adkins and Iko Uwais. You're like, that's what my wife's saying. Like, your wife actually talks you into it. Which I
so, yeah. Anyway, so yeah, I hadn't said anything because I didn't know if we were keeping it on the DL or what, but contract signed and we're good. So yeah, we move forward. And I did get some super secret footage now because I get to see all the cool stuff. And It's good. We're good. Liam, all you have to do now is not fuck this movie up and we'll be good.
That's all I'm trying to do, man. It's just, it's such a, I mean, yeah, I just want to talk more about it, but I can't. But it is always so interesting because, like, you're going through the reels and, you know, the reels, the way you edit is, it's broken up into these 20-minute reels, which is all just kind of a holdover from
when it was actually film. Yeah.
But it still kind of just makes sense in our brains. You can't really, like, you can only really hold like 20 minutes of data, like 100% at a time. And so it still works digitally. And because of how much data the reels are, it's better to break them up. Cause at the end, when you start, you know, onlining everything, you have to do that in like a different machine. Cause it's so huge. The files end up being so massive and everything. So it just makes it easier to work on it 20 minutes a time. But we like finished Reel 2 early on Friday, and then I had to get into Reel 3, and then like just seeing like Louis Mandelor pop up, and I was like, oh my God, like, because in my mind the movie is kind of tied to the shoot order rather than the script order, because in Louis didn't come till the last like 2.5 weeks. So seeing him like, you know, earlier in the movie, you're like, wow, and your brain just starts getting like triggered, and it's so fun to see you know, like, some of my favorite actors, and they're improvising and doing all this fun stuff, and just being like, oh man, I had to then dig into like a completely new reel on Friday, and it was almost too much. So tomorrow it's like the whole week is that reel, so I'm very excited to get to the halfway mark.
Vice, you were gonna say something?
I'm seeing in my mind's eye, you at the premiere with a gold cane and a derby and a cigar as the executive producer. You're on the catwalk, whatever, you know, taking pictures of the producer of Scott Adkins' new movie, Michael Scott. Mr. Michael Scott. Oh man, the Don, Michael Scott. Oh my, this is incredible. Oh my God. You gotta get a new suit too.
Yeah, clearly.
That's true. New suits for, you know, hopefully the fall. Hopefully the world doesn't end until, you know.
Yeah, world can't end now.
World cannot end now,
for sure.
Someone burn Sora down. That's all I'm asking.
But yeah, so anyway, I'm excited to be on this journey. I'm excited for the opportunity. And mostly, you know, again, not to blow smoke up your ass, I'm just glad I could help. But yeah. Like, for all our kayfabe, which we don't do as much as we used to anymore, but, you know, I fucking love you, man. And I'm glad that I was able to help, and that makes me very happy. So,
thank you.
Yeah. So I think that's a good place to wrap it up. And so, yeah, Vice, where can people find you?
Man, I'm on Cloud Nine, man. This is great news. That's where I'm at. but yeah, I'll be on Instagram as always at Vice Fitness. You can I'll probably post my karate journey there along with my my ongoing weightlifting midnight gym side of, kind of gonna keep doing that as well. So kind of get with this thing in the shape, but for the summertime because Steve's season is coming. Weather's warming up here in February. Yeah, so I gotta get ready, man. I'm gonna have my sleeveless gi like Ryu. I'm on Letterboxd at my Victus. Just as far as reviews, movies coming up, next week actually, I didn't realize until next week, big movie coming out. Dune,
yeah,
Dunk 2 coming out. So, gotta get ready for that. So, then, I'll have my, should you check my review for the first movie there as well? And then, we're gonna get ready for that.
Yeah, I think we'll talk Dunk 2 and also I realized this week Orlando Bloom's foray into DTV action Red Right Hand dropped this week. I didn't get a chance to watch it, but I will watch it and we'll be talking about that next week too.
Okay. And as always, I always say this and I'm going to do it because it's fun talking shit on Twitter, but recently I posted my kind of announcement, if you will, about karate, and I got an overwhelming positive response, to have 30,000 likes in this tweet or whatever, just me, basically what I just told you guys, I put it in tweet form, what my experience there, and it's got a really positive response, and lots of action martial artists applying with, that's really, it really means a lot. So thank you everybody for the support there on Twitter, but I'm still talking shit on Twitter, as always.
Liam, where can people find you?
Still, A3 Discord is the most direct line to my brain. And then I've actually been tweeting a little bit more lately, which is bad. And Instagram. Good.
Liam Odin at all of them. You won't be able to find me anywhere because I'm big time now, motherfuckers. I'm in Hollywood. That's where you're going to find me.
This is the long con is that Mike is like humble, nice guy of the pod, but now the monster is unleashed.
No, just kidding. Nothing is changing. We are gonna do this everything until the heat death of the universe. In fact, Maxie, if you're listening, I apologize. You've sent me a couple messages. Max and I have some big plans for some stuff we want to do. I just haven't had the time to get back to him and hammer some stuff out. He and I really need to sit down on a Zoom call at some point. I also do want to shout out really quick, a good friend of the show, Spencer Schwendeman, just got a mentorship where he's going to be working with Ed Neumeier of RoboCop and Starship Troopers fame. He's going to be writing some projects with him and stuff like that, which is
unbelievable. Congratulations.
Incredibly cool. Congrats, Spencer. You guys know, probably remember Spencer gave me my first IMDb credit. I did voiceover work for one of his shorts. So anyway, you can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Hibachi Justice. You can find the show at A4E Podcasts, linktree.com/A4E Podcast. Join the A4E Discord. It rules. We have a lot of fun over there. You're listening to us, so you can find us anywhere podcasts can be found. And as always, big things coming up on the A4E. So we love you all. We will we'll talk to you soon. Boys, love you. Let's do this again next week.
Peace.